Welcome to the Brilliant Business Moms Podcast, episode 104, with Sarah Kornack and Beth Ann Schwamberger. Today on the show, we're talking with Angie Gordon of Gathered and Sewn. Angie makes beautiful handmade purses and handbags, which she sells locally and on Etsy. Angie also teaches classes locally about how to get started on Etsy, and she has also created her very own craft fair in her hometown. And today we really quiz Angie about both of those topics, her classes and her craft fair, and really learn a lot of new interesting things. So let's get started.
You're listening to the Brilliant Business Moms Podcast, practical business advice for startup moms.
Today on the podcast, we are pleased to welcome Angie Gordon. Angie handcrafts beautiful purses and bags, which she sells on her Etsy shop, Gathered and Sewn, as well as on her website. She also teaches classes and has organized her own craft fair. Angie lives in Wisconsin with her husband and two daughters. Welcome to the podcast, Angie.
Well, thank you for having me.
Angie, could you begin by telling us a little bit more about yourself, your family, and how you got started in business?
Yeah, actually, it's kind of a funny story. My daughters are, as I just found out, older than you thought. They're 10 and 12, and so I have a middle schooler, like preteen, which is very scary. Then my other daughter is 10 years old. So we live in Sheboygan, and it's kind of funny because people love to say Sheboygan. It's a funny name. And our city's name gets referenced in a lot of random movies and TV shows just because it's such a weird name. So that's a little fact about where we live. And I actually totally got started by accident. I had no idea that I could sew or that I could design and really just, I kind of engineer like the design of my bags from an idea in my head to the actual bag that you see. And I had no idea that I could even do that until one day I just sat down and started to do it. So it's kind of like an accidental thing that I realized later on was kind of what I was meant to do all along, because I absolutely love what I'm doing. So it just started when my kids were little. A friend of mine, she and I sat down and decided to make ourselves bags, and we were using patterns. And I discovered that I hate using a pattern. I don't know how to read them. I don't like the lingo. Trying to lay them out and get the pieces in the right place just doesn't make any sense to me. So when I went off the pattern and started to make it just by like seeing it in my own mind, I realized that it came a lot easier. So that was kind of how it started. So she and I made a few bags, and then friends at our daughter's schools and at church and things would see our bags and then ask us to make one. So we would. And it just kind of organically grew from there. Like, people that we knew would ask for them, and then people I didn't know would ask for them. And I started doing home parties in people's houses, which was a total surprise to me too, because somebody asked me if I'd be willing to do one, and I thought, why not? So I started doing the home parties, and then I was introduced to Etsy by a friend, I'm trying to think of what year that even was. Maybe 2008 or 2009. It was pretty early on when Etsy started. And I didn't actually start selling on Etsy till probably closer to like 2010. And that was really how it all started.
I love that you just did your own thing, Angie, in terms of, you know, you didn't follow the rule book. You just figured out what worked for you. And I think that's so fun. And we've actually interviewed another mom before who had just recently learned to sew also, and then, you know, was getting requests from her friends to make more of her item. And yeah, there you go. In terms of Etsy, do you have any tips? I know we have quite a lot of Etsy sellers in our that listen into our podcast. Do you have any tips that would help some new Etsy sellers to succeed on that platform?
I think that the biggest tip is, and I see this all the time, and like you said earlier, I actually call them workshops, because I go in with a topic, but then we kind of go by at the pace of the girls in the room. I say girls because it's always been girls. I have yet to have a man, but I would welcome one if they wanted to come and learn. But the biggest thing and the biggest misconception that people have about selling on Etsy or any online website is that if you put it out there, the people will come. And it does take work, and it does take time and patience. And I think you just have to be patient and do the work And once you start really doing the work, you'll start to see the payoff. Because once people start to notice you and see your things and like your things, and then they start to buy your things, it gets much easier after that point. It's really getting to that first sale and then the second sale, and just getting established is the hardest part, I think. But a lot of people tend to think that I'll just put it out there and people will see my stuff and my Etsy shop will take off and it'll be great. But it's really not that easy most of the time. Sometimes it is, but most of the times it isn't. And I've seen some girls do some really great things when they just kind of take a few minutes away from making their craft and spend some time actually getting their name out there and taking great pictures and working on their listings and their tags and their titles, and then actually working the back end of Etsy. And then they see greater results much quicker than if they just kind of sit back and wait.
Definitely. And I think you're right. Just getting started, those initial views, sales, favorites, all of that, man, once you can get that, it can be a bit of a snowball, you know, and sales can beget sales. But like you said, you have to work at it, and you have to work at your listings. You have to be able to get found. And in a lot of cases too, you have to, you know, reach out to bloggers or get on social media and just get the word out.
Absolutely. And I see that in a lot of groups. I'm in a couple different groups too, like on Facebook and things like that, for online and Etsy sellers, basically handmade sellers or mompreneurs, you know, that's like my group of people. And I see a lot of times people just get so discouraged so quickly. And I just always like to respond and say, don't get discouraged so quick. You know, it's just so hard to communicate that to people, that this didn't just happen for me overnight. This has taken me a few years. And like you said, it's just that initial, you have to find the product that people want, get that product going. And then once that starts going, you're established and you're reputable and you're found easier on the Etsy algorithms. But it just takes that time. And once people get that, I think that they can have a little bit more motivation to keep on going, instead of getting kind of lost in the nothing's ever going to happen, nobody's seeing my shop. And because it's easy to fall into that trap too, I think.
So I'm really curious about these workshops that you teach locally. How did that get started? How did you find the people or have the idea to do these in-person workshops?
Well, the people actually have found me. And I guess what happens is people would see what I was doing, because in my local area, people that friends of family would start to hear that I was selling online. Because it's funny, because local people don't always realize the magnitude of where I'm sending all of my stuff. So they just see me as this girl who has this little room in her house where she makes purses. But and once they realize that it is more to that, then they realize that that's within reach for them too. So I had been getting a lot of phone calls or messages, emails, Facebook messages from people asking me to help them get their Etsy shop started, because they had a craft that they wanted to get out there. And I love helping people get their shop started, but it was taking, I can't just sit down with a person for an hour and get their Etsy shop off the ground. So I was spending many, many days or hours on the phone or on email or in person helping these people get their shop started. So it was actually one of the girls that I was working with, and she told me, she's like, Angie, you should really start to do these as classes where you can get a group of people together and go through all of this with them at once. So I put it out there and I found a place locally. A coffee shop has this room that they rent out for free, and it has like an overhead projector. It's a beautiful little space that we can use, and they can order coffee and food. We love it. And so I did the first workshop, and the first one, when I finished, it was 2.5 hours long, and I had this whole like curriculum made, and I was really ready to go. And I looked around the room at the end of it, and they were like deer in headlights. So I think I covered too much too fast. So then I broke it down, and I did the next class was a little bit smaller. And I think I had 5 or 6 women there, and we started at the very beginning. And we started with making their first listing, writing their policies, making an about page. And I kind of went through all of the shipping things, like everything that was important to get their shop opened. And then the next class was photography and listings and things like that. And then I did some classes on branding. I brought in a photographer to teach about photography. I don't know why I just emphasized fee, but anyway, so I do reach out to the community too, to other people who have expertise in areas that I don't. And I just offer these classes to anybody who wants to take them. And I've always had a response. And it's just been really wonderful because I love to get out there and talk about what I do. Because we all love to talk about what we do, of course. But so it's been a great outlet for me.
That sounds amazing. I'm just like, how can I do this where I am? Because it just sounds so much fun. Like you said, you get together, you get to order your coffee, come learn about selling on Etsy. And I love that you're bringing in other experts as well. That's just super cool. So it sounds like mostly you've gotten the word out about your classes. Has it been mostly word of mouth, or are there other ways?
Yeah, it's been mostly word of mouth, but Facebook is a biggie. So I actually started a Sheboygan Etsy sellers Facebook page for, it's not just for people in my immediate city, but for anybody in probably within an hour's distance of here. So Milwaukee, Green Bay, Madison, any of those areas. And we share ideas, they ask questions. So we do a lot of different things like that. And whenever I'm doing another class, I just post it on there and then people just call me and sign up. So it's been very easy and so much fun. It's like you said, it's just a bunch of, it's a very laid back format. I don't stand up in the front of the room. I sit at the tables with the girls. We all work together. And when they come up with questions, I answer them in the class so everybody understands and hears it. And we work at their pace. And it's just worked out really well for me.
So do they like bring their laptops with them so that as you're talking about setting up that first listing or the policies, they're kind of working on their own stuff and asking questions?
Yep. Okay. Yeah, so everybody has a laptop, and if they don't have one, I've had people bring in just an iPad if that's all they have. And I've had one or two people who didn't have either, so they just brought along a notebook, and then they just went home and worked on it. But I have found that it definitely works better if everybody has their account open in front of them and works on it together.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Yeah. Do you mind me asking how much you charge for each class?
Usually $20 a person. I try to keep it affordable, and I understand that sometimes even $20 for a person plus having to find childcare because it's usually a Thursday night. So $20 a person, and then I actually put a cap usually at 10 people. So I'm not raking in the money by doing the classes, but I just found that it holds their place in the class. It allows me to spend the time that I need to prepare for that class. And then they don't feel like they're out a lot of money by spending, because it would be hard for me to commit to a $100 class. And that's just me, because I prioritize where I spend my money. So I want this to be something that's fun and not a burden for people. And $20 seems to work really well.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds great, particularly since you can get your space for free. That seems like it can work. Although, you know, of course, you are being super generous too. That's
well,
awesome.
And depending on the enrollment and how many people are there, I usually will buy them a cup of coffee or something too, because I want to support the coffee house that's letting us be there.
Yeah.
Because they're sacrificing their time. So I want to make sure that every person who comes in for my class also buys something. So sometimes my way of guaranteeing that is by actually just buying it for them. And it only costs me a couple dollars. It's not really a big deal. And they appreciate it, I think. It's always nice to get something for nothing.
And so how long does it take for you to prep for each of your classes?
You know, it really depends. Some of the classes I walk in there and I've done a lot of prep work, because I've done some where I actually make a little slideshow that I can keep on my computer screen to show them what I'm doing. Some of them I really can't prepare a whole lot for because I don't really know where they're all at. So I will go through and read articles and look back at what I have and pull up websites and things on Pinterest that I can show as a reference. But a lot of it, I have found a lot of my classes just tend to happen naturally. And for that, there's not a whole lot of prep that I can do for a lot of them. So I would say if I have a class on a Thursday night, I probably spend a better part of Thursday just kind of immersing myself in the topic as much as I can. And I usually put together a little folder of printed materials that they can take home to reference later. And so, and then once I've done that once, if I do that same class later, I've already got the materials and everything. So,
from a business perspective, it sounds like you're keeping things, like you said, really reasonable. You're not raking in the money necessarily.
Yeah.
Has this been a valuable component to your business strategy? Do you think you can continue with this model going forward? Because, I mean, your time is very valuable. Is it contributing to your overall business, or is it more just a generosity, love to help others,
you know,
type thing?
For the workshops, I do, I guess it's an answer both ways, because I love doing it. It actually is something that when I have a class scheduled, I get excited and I look forward to it and I love the interaction. So I kind of see that as a hobby with benefits, because I'm able to help people. I'm able to make a little bit of extra money, which is always nice. But I don't necessarily think that that is the meat and potatoes of what I do. Definitely making the handbags and that side of my business is where I make my money. But this is something that I don't think I'll give up, because I just love it so much. I love seeing what other people are doing. I love being a part of that. It's like a natural community that I get to be a part of. So I'll call it a hobby with benefits.
I love that term. I think, you know, and I think it's fine to have things like that. That's just, like you said, you can tell how much you love that, how much you love helping other sellers and encouraging, supporting, teaching. And so, you know, if that energizes you and keeps you going, like, that's awesome.
It absolutely does. Yeah. That's how I describe it. It just totally energizes me.
But I think another person could take this same idea, and maybe they don't view it so much as a hobby. Another person could do another local type thing similarly and truly treat it as like a huge part of their business model.
Absolutely.
They could turn this idea into something that is a huge component of their handmade business.
Some people have recommended to me too that I call like the local, we have like a university extension here in our city, which is basically like part of the University of Wisconsin system. And they told me to reach out to them, because they do teach classes like that. So there are options out there that if you want to be I'll use the term, if you want to be totally legit and you can have your name in print and be on a course guide, you can do that, because there is a need for it and there are avenues in which you can do that. But I just choose to keep this mine in particular just very informal and just very community oriented. But yeah, there's definitely other ways that people could do this if they wanted to make something more of it.
Yeah, I think I've seen in our like local community college guide that they'll send home, you can propose to the community college a class idea that you want to offer and be the teacher of the class. So if you had a skill either just selling on Etsy or your particular skill, I suppose that could be another avenue, not doing it on your own.
And even like park departments too, like in our community it's called the recreation department, and it's through the school system, but they always offer different courses and things for adults too. So that's another place that people could do this. And like you said, it's not just about teaching how to do the like back-end website things. It can also just be teaching your craft, because people love to learn new things. So if you're a knitter, you could do knitting and crocheting classes. People love that kind of thing. So, and there's always people who want to learn what you're doing. So I think there's almost always an audience for what you have to tell them if you're willing to get up and teach.
Okay, now I think you have many mamapreneurs' brains spinning. I know, I was thinking like, oh, that's so true. That's really interesting. There's so many different skills that a talented mom could teach. The other thing I was thinking in terms of your model, Angie, is you could also expand into like a one-day conference perhaps, or something of that nature. And I'm not telling you this is what you should do. I'm just, you know, just spinning with other ideas of like, okay, you know, that's another way to kind of make it a little bigger or turn it into more of a business, something like that.
I actually I was just talking to you girls and I told you I just read the $100 Startup, and there was one part of that book where there's a lady who did just that. Like I can't remember what her business was about or anything, but she does these retreats and it's all for people who do the same thing she does. And all of a sudden that got me thinking. I was like, oh, a whole day of all people who make crafts and sell them online. Like, I can't think of anything better. And I was just thinking of all these different breakout sessions that we could do. So it is on my radar, because I myself would love to go to something like that. And I'm a person who says, I always walk into our school, like, for example, in my kids' school, I'm a person who walks in there and I am very careful not to say, someone should do this, because usually if you say someone should, that means you need to. But I'm saying someone should do that in my area, so I'm thinking that I might need to do that. So it's on my radar. I'm just trying to figure out how it would all work. But I love that idea, and that's something I've been thinking about since I read that book a few weeks ago.
Awesome. Oh, so many ideas spinning around.
The creative mind, it never stops.
I really think there'll be a lot of moms listening that the light bulb's going to come on and they'll go, okay, like I'm awesome at knitting, but maybe my Etsy shop, I'm still trying to get that built up or trying to whatever, but I've got this excellent skill. And, oh, hey, why don't I go suggest myself, you know, to the community college or whatever the case is. So, yeah.
Well, and it's true because even getting your name out there for a class gets your name out there for your craft as well. So if you are advertising yourself as an established Etsy seller, people are like, oh, I want to see her shop. So, you know, it advertises both ways. So
that's true. And I would encourage to any listeners who are their wheels are spinning here and they're saying to themselves, but I'm not an expert. I'm not expert enough. And I don't remember, Bethany, where we heard this, but I know we've talked about it before. You're always more expert than somebody else. Like, you don't have to be the number one top expert in your field. You know everything in order to teach what you do know to somebody else. Somebody else is just a beginner or doesn't know what you know.
That totally reminds me of this thing that it was going around on Facebook. I've seen it before, but I saw it again this week, and it shows, like, a guy running, and he's running really, really, really slow. And he says, I may be running slow, but I'm lapping all the people sitting on the couch. And I think it's the same thing. You know, like, I don't know everything there is to know, far from it. I myself take a lot of online classes and am in groups to grow my knowledge of how to sell on Etsy. But I take what I do know, and some of these things have taken me so long to figure out, and I'm so happy to pass the shortcuts on to somebody else. So I think it's just a matter of you're further than that person is, and so sometimes you just have to take them by the hand to get them to where you're at. And then let them learn from there, too. So,
Yeah, exactly. And, two, I have to say, I think there's a lot of value in learning from someone that's just a few steps ahead of you versus someone who's 20 steps ahead.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, yeah, because they're like where they're at in their business is so far ahead that it's hard. I think sometimes it's even hard for them to remember what those beginning stages were like. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They forgot the birth pains.
Yeah. Right.
So, Angie, I know another branch of your business is that you've organized a local craft show. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes, because this is, I think, another thing that might get some moms excited, too, because this was, I think in my world, things happen by accident and that I just kind of figure things out as I go. But back when I was doing house parties, and that we're talking probably, let's see, I'm guessing 7 years ago. Okay. So when I was just doing house parties, every once in a while, I would do one at my own home. And one year I did one in November, and I invited a couple of other friends who either made things or sold things. And we kind of did like a little mini mall in my house. And so they'd come to see my bags and they'd look at other things. And then I started to realize that November was a really great time. Thursday nights were a really great time. So it kind of became a tradition after 1 or 2 years of doing this that I started to do it every year, and it kind of grew. And after about the second year, people started calling me and asking if they could come and set up at my open house, because that's what I always called it, my open house. And so probably 4 years ago, my open house got to be so big that I think I had like 14 people set up in my home. And I had so many people coming through my house because it would only be from, I'm thinking like 5:30 to 7:30. So it was like a 2-hour open house. I'd have people come set up a few hours before. And then for 2 hours, I just have people filtering through. And so I would sometimes get like 70 people, which blew me away that 70 people would want to come to my house to see my stuff, because I did all the advertising for it. I would go on Vistaprint and make postcards, and I'd mail them out or hand them out at church and school. And so it would be 90% people that I invited that came, and a few stragglers that came with the other artists that were set up. And I think it was now 2 years ago, we moved to this house, which is an older home, so the rooms aren't big and open like they were in my other house. And I had 80 people come to my house within 2 hours, and we were shoulder to shoulder in here. So last summer, I decided that I wanted to try something different, and I moved it to the coffee house, actually, where I do my classes, because once again, they let me use it for free. They let me take over the whole coffee shop. They helped me advertise for it. And so I thought, well, now that I'm out in the community, we had to come up with a name, and I had somebody help me plan it a little bit so that I had someone to kind of bounce ideas off of. And so that's when we started Handmade Chic. And we started it in summer just to kind of test it out. And it went really well. I think I had 85 people come through. And that one was on a Saturday morning. And then it came time for my third week of November open house. And I did it at the coffee house. And this time we had like 90, 95 people. Oh, no, I take that back. No, that's wrong. This is the Christmas one, the winter one. I had over 200 people come to that one. And that one was just over a period of like 3.5 hours. So after the success of the November one, I did another summer one just a few weeks ago. And this time I brought on board two people to just help me to delegate out some of the planning. And instead of people calling me up and asking if they could be a part of it, I ended up taking applications and we kind of juried the applicants and picked them based on what they were selling and what their booths would look like. And we actually like put the whole show together. And so that was just a few weeks ago. So now I'm really excited about the November one because the November one tends to be my bigger show because people are starting to Christmas shop. And so I'm really excited about that because now I think I've worked out all the kinks and now we're just going to keep going with it.
Wow. So this is now kind of turning into a twice annual craft show.
Yes.
Did you do the summer one also inside the coffee shop or are you starting to outgrow the coffee shop for space?
We are definitely outgrowing the coffee shop for space. And we did use outside area. And fortunately, we had beautiful weather this year. And that's the hard thing about being in Wisconsin is our weather is so unpredictable. So where we live, like the other day, it dropped 20 degrees in a matter of 20 minutes. So like, we just got really lucky that day and had really beautiful weather. But now this coffee shop where I usually hold my things, there's this major bridge right outside of it because it's on a very busy road, and that bridge is closed until probably the end of the year. So I'm trying desperately to find another venue to hold our November event. So that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Do the crafters pay a fee to be part of the show, or is it just that they apply and then you pick the best ones?
Well, I do have them pay a fee, and this year for the summer one, I charged $35 for a booth, and they're very small booths. Like, everybody had a 5-foot by 5-foot space, so they had to keep it within the 5 feet just because we were so limited. But if you paid for an outdoor booth, it was only $20 because the weather is not our friend here. So they paid $20, and they could have as much space as they needed. So we try to keep the price reasonable because, as artists, we all know that really, this is your income. So I try to keep it reasonable and affordable, but yet enough so that I can sufficiently advertise it, because that's what I use the money for, is all of the advertising and things that we put into it. So I basically put the money back into it again.
Do you think you'll continue to do it that way, just put the money back into it, or do you eventually hope to make this kind of, I mean, you're doing so much work for this.
And actually, this year, my friend Kim, who helped me with, she helped me with the planning. She's amazing. She is so the opposite of me in the sense of her organization skills and things like that. Like, she's so organized, and she helped me move everything to Google Docs, so it was very seamless for us to go back and forth. And I felt horrible when this was all said and done and realized all of the work that she put into it. And I'm like, we didn't pay ourselves. And I felt kind of guilty that I didn't pay her. So I am going to factor that into the next one. And I think that if we find a bigger place, naturally, we're just going to have more artists. So we naturally will have more money to go to work with. And I will be able to pay her for her work because it is so valuable that I feel like it has to be, she has to be compensated for her time. So that is something that I'm going to kind of think about as I'm planning the next one.
I'm curious, Andy, you took the fee money and you used that for advertising. What were the main types of advertising that you're doing for your craft show?
Well, I go back to, because it has worked the best for me in the past, is the postcards. But now I actually make my postcards through a website called Hot Prints USA. And I'll give you the web address for that because it's called Hot Prints, but its website is a little bit different. Anyways, so I buy all my postcards from them because they're beautiful, like beautiful glossy postcards. They're relatively inexpensive, and if I would get better about planning early enough, I wouldn't have to pay for expedited shipping. So that is on my goal list for my November show, is to order my postcards early. And I actually am very old-fashioned in that I sit down with my personal address book and the address books of some of the people that I know, and I handwrite out addresses and mail them out to people. And it's probably not the most cost-effective form of advertising, but it is by far the best way to get people in the door, because I can't even tell you how many people walk in and say, I'm so glad you sent me that postcard, because that postcard is now hanging on the refrigerator and they're looking at it all the time. And then they also know that I took the time to write it to them. So I just think that going back to the basics sometimes is the best way to go. And then I order enough of the postcards so that if any of the artists want to send them to people that they know, that they do the same thing. So it has worked really well for us. And then I also just bring those into local businesses and put them out on their counters, because it's something people can pick up and take home if they're interested. So that is probably where I spend the most money, is just in postage and materials for the postcards. But then I also do pay for some Facebook ads, because Facebook is also a really great way to do it if you pay for the ads.
That's great. And I have to say, one, I do think there is some benefit to, you know, even though it's old school, like you said, they're getting that invitation in their hands and sticking it on the fridge. And I mean, I think about if I get like a baby shower invitation or wedding invitation, that's what happens. I stick it on the fridge and then I'll actually remember.
Oh,
I mean, I suppose, you know, I could write it in my planner as well. And I could do that, I suppose, with an online thing. But yeah, there's something about getting that physical invitation that I do feel like is still, you know, can be helpful. And then with the Facebook ads, so are you, you're targeting then just people who live in your area?
Yeah.
Correct? Okay.
Within, like, I'd say within 45 miles of this area. And this, in the summer one, I spent a lot of time just talking to people that I did not know, because I also do, like, when the people walk in, this year I had a girl, she's so amazing. She helps me out with so many things. She packages my orders for me and she works for purses. It's like the best business arrangement ever. She does not ever want to take money, but she does so much of my packaging and shipping for me. And she also volunteered her time that day, and she stood at the door and greeted people as they came in, had them sign in where we do like a door prize drawing. And then that way we are also getting their names and I can kind of see who came through. And I was so excited this year because I did not know most of the people that came, and which is different, because in the past I've always known at least most of the people. They're all people that I know. This year, all of those people came. In addition, I had a lot of people that I didn't know. And so I was asking them, and a lot of them said that they heard the people that I didn't know. A lot of them were saying, I saw it on Facebook. So I was really excited about that, because you never really know if your ads are going to pay off. And in this particular case, those Facebook ads really did pay off, because they did bring in some people.
That's neat. Yeah. And I'm sure, too, the word, if you continue this, the word will continue to spread just organically as well. I know that at least locally here in Pittsburgh, people know what the best craft shows are to go to. Everybody knows, oh, well, that one's really good, but this one stinks. Don't bother with that one. So as you continue, that reputation will also help, I'm sure, to get a lot of people in the door.
Well, and we've been spending a lot, like I've been very, very intentional with this one about the way that it's called Handmade Chic Artist Market. And so we're really, really careful with the way that the words that we choose to describe it, because I want the clear message to be that this is all handmade artists. These are not like home, you know how sometimes you go to a craft fair and you get there and it's all like home party basically?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
it's a bummer.
So, yeah. And that can be really hard, because I did a lot for many years with my friends. I would let them set up their home based businesses and they just stood here. Nobody was really interested. And it was heartbreaking for me, because I want everybody to do really well. But I just learned really quickly that the customers who were coming in shopping were not looking for that kind of product. So I've decided that what sets this little craft fair apart that I'm running, apart from all the other ones that are in our area, is that it is exclusively handmade. And I really try hard to pick my vendors, even though I hate that word because it implies not handmade. But we do pick our vendors very intentionally based on what their online presence is and how seriously they take what they do. So all the people, I was really proud, because all of the girls that we had at our summer show, they all are making a go of this as a business, not just a hobby. And so it was really neat to see that all play out, because you can see the passion as people are shopping through their stuff.
That would be really fun to see.
Yeah.
The reactions that people have to their items, and that they are really taking their business seriously and working hard at their craft. And that is one huge advantage of the fact that you made it a juried show.
Yep.
You can really take a look at those photos and look at their descriptions of what they do. And so then you can make this the best craft show.
Absolutely.
Of the top artists in your area.
And if anybody listening is thinking of doing that, hire yourselves a Kim, because there's nothing harder than having to turn down your own friends and family, not because they're not good at what they do, but because there might already be somebody who signed up earlier. You know, like, there's so many variables, and I was not emotionally stable enough to be able to say no to friends and family. So I brought Kim on board to help me with all of that, and she's so professional and good about it that I just put all of the jurying in her hands, because she's new to our area. She doesn't know who anybody is. She's looking strictly as a shopper and what I'd be looking for at this show when I come. And she put together a beautiful group of artists for this show. So I'm so grateful for what she did for it.
That's smart to have somebody else as a guard. Yes. With the friends and family to give the gentle no to avoid the hurt feeling.
It is, because it's never anything personal, and it's usually not even anything about what their craft is. But, you know, when you're planning a Christmas gift show, we really have to think, what are people shopping for as Christmas gifts? And I've learned, like, the summer show, people a lot of times bring their kids because it's a Saturday during the day. So we're looking for a different type of artist for the summer show than we are for the November, like, gift type show. And so to have somebody like her to help me sort that all out and give the gentle, you're not what we're looking for right now, nothing personal. You know, it's easier coming from her than it is from me. So, and plus, I was getting so many phone calls from like girls who've taken my class or friends or family saying, I can't wait for Handmade Chic. When is the application? Because I'm going to sign up. And when they would say sign up, that to me, that implied that they thought that they were automatically in. So it gave me the freedom to be able to say, hey, no guarantees, because I'm actually not in charge of choosing the artist this year. So that was really, really helpful for me to be able to do that just from the beginning.
That's really smart. So I'm curious, I'm sure you've had a few logistical struggles. I guess we've talked about some of them in terms of, you know, the weather being a factor, and you're currently searching for a new space. But yep. I'm curious, have there been other things in the past that have been maybe a challenge that you've learned a bit of a lesson that you could pass on to our listeners?
I am trying to think about that, because, I mean, there's always challenges that you just don't even see coming. I think that the biggest challenge usually for me is just, and this is just my own personal weakness, is just communication and feeling like I'm never quite communicating enough with my artist. And I always feel like there's never quite enough advertising that I can do. So I think it's just kind of my own personal thoughts that hold me back, or my own personal thing. I just kind of beat myself up over feeling like I haven't done enough, and then just waiting for it to all play out and hoping that it all goes well. But I think that if you just have systems in place and an idea of how you want to have it done, things just kind of naturally fall into place. And when those little things do go wrong, it just works out anyways. And your guests are never going to realize that things went wrong, because they're just there for shopping and they're bringing their girlfriends and they're having a good time, that all those little details just don't seem to matter. So
for anyone listening who's contemplating this idea in their local hometown, what are they in for? How many hours does it take to, like, let's say the last craft show that was one of your biggest ones,
yeah,
the summer one or the winter one, what are they in for? How much time is this going to take for them to pull off a successful craft show?
It takes an insane amount of hours. As a matter of fact, like, I finished Handmade Chic was, I'm trying to think of the date, was it June 27th? So we're, you know, a good month and a half away from that, or out from that. And I am starting now to plan the winter one. And so from starting to pick, because we have to make posters, so we have to really have like a theme and colors. I have an actual logo for it that I try to just change out for the seasons to make it easier. But I have to start thinking this early about how we're going to, what are the postcards going to look like, so that I can order them early enough. And then I have to design them. And then it's making the application, it's updating the website, it's advertising all of the artists on our Facebook page, because I'll make a Facebook page for the event. The other thing that I didn't talk about with advertising for these, which is probably my best tip, is the free advertising that you can get locally. Radio stations oftentimes have community events. You can call up the radio station or email them your event, and they will actually read it on air for a week or two before the event so that people listening in their cars as they're driving might hear about your event. So that's always free. And probably TV stations. What I usually do is hire somebody to write a press release, and I have them write it more as an article, not as just a for immediate release type of thing. And I've had that article published in like newspapers and things in our area, which has brought us a lot of exposure, and it cost us absolutely nothing. But all of those things just take time. And then the day of the actual event, I'm usually try to be the first one there, although every single time somebody beats me there and starts setting up before I can even get there. And then there's the night before. So I don't even know if I could put a number on the hours. I just know that it takes a lot of time. And when I'm not physically working on it, I'm thinking about it. So it's a huge undertaking, but it's very rewarding. And it's just like with my classes, it's something that I look forward to. So you just have to be cut out for it, I think.
Now, I know at this point, the craft show itself is not a financial benefit to your business,
yeah.
But you do sell at these shows,
I do.
Correct?
Yep. Yes, I do.
So how much does that play a factor into your own personal business, you being able to sell at all of these events that you have created? Is that a big part of your business?
You know, it's actually right now I'm going through, it's kind of evolving. And after this summer show, I just came home and I said to my husband, I said, it's almost as if I've created a monster. Because when I was doing this in my home, everybody who was coming because I invited them and because it was in my home. So they were coming for my things and I would sell so much stuff. Like it was a guaranteed really good night for me. So this was a valuable source of income. But now as my event is growing and becoming more public and I'm getting really high quality artists, my personal sales at the events are actually going down because there's so many great things to choose from. So while the event itself is growing, it's kind of taking away from my own personal gain at the show. So I don't think I would ever not set up a booth at my own show because that's the only time that I locally get to put my things out there. But like, you know, kind of going back to what we said before, I think I'm going to start to consider compensating myself for the time that I put into it ahead of time because I can no longer really count on that income from the sales of that night. So I'm going to see how November goes and see how things have changed because, like I said, November is by far the one that I sell the most at. So I'm going to, you know, we're going to find out where we're going to be and how many booths we can have. And so everything's going to kind of be up in the air for this one because it's going to be different.
I can see how that could be the case when you had just a few people at your own home,
yeah.
A lot of personal friends, they're selling like hotcakes, and your purses are gorgeous,
thank
they're beautiful,
you.
And your photos of them are wonderful. But as you get more competition for, I mean, various items, maybe it's not a direct purse competition,
yeah.
But it's, I could buy a purse for my mom for Christmas, or I could buy her a beautiful piece of jewelry,
absolutely.
Or I could buy her this beautiful home decor item. So
yep. That
makes sense. And I think you should compensate yourself. It sounds like a ton of
You know how hard that is to do, though? Because I'm just so much like I love what I'm doing that I feel guilty taking money for it because I'm just like, this is almost too good to be true and I should just be putting it back into it. It's sometimes hard to take a step back and realize I have to still feed my family. So I think that that's something that I'm really trying to work out how I'm going to make that look.
But I think a lot of people are hesitant to compensate themselves fairly for the work. And it takes time to build up.
It totally does.
I mean, you couldn't just start off the bat charging $200 for a table. Like, your progression makes a lot of sense.
Well, and you have to, like, build up a reputation so that your reputation
right.
precedes, like, people even wanting to be there because they need to have a reason to come. And if I'm not bringing the people in and they're hearing from other vendors that this is a horrible show, you know.
Yeah.
So, right.
So it is so true. But it's just like when you price your products, too. Like, so many people underprice their products because they just want them to sell. And so I'm finally getting to a good point where I think I'm charging enough for my products. And then all of a sudden I'm like, now do I have to price myself for this too?
But yeah, it seems like you've done the build up work. Like you've set the awesome groundwork for your craft show.
Yep.
It sounds, I wish I could go.
I know. Idama said the same thing when I talked to her. She's like, I really want to just fly to Sheboygan just so that I can come and have my cheek.
I just went to, yeah, say I can go to Sheboygan. That would be really fun just to say that.
I know. I'm going to Sheboygan. The bratwurst capital of the world.
Bratwurst?
That's so fun. It is. They just have bratwurst days this weekend. It's a huge little, well, I call it a huge little festival because we're kind of a small town. But they have this big festival that's a whole weekend celebrating bratwurst. There's a parade, and they bring in, like, big music. And it's so funny.
A parade for bratwurst. Do they have, like, costumes, people dressed up like bratwurst?
There is, yes. There's the Johnsonville brat guy, because Johnsonville brats, like, have you heard of Johnsonville before?
Oh, yeah. We get them all the time.
That's here in Sheboygan. It's like, that's where Johnsonville is. So they have, like, the Johnsonville guy walk. It's a big, like, inflatable man walking down the parade. And he was giving out stuffed pigs, like, with Johnsonville T-shirts on. And my kids were just thrilled because they both got, like, 6 stuffed pigs at the parade.
A pig? But that's kind of, like, gross.
I know.
Because it's, like, the animal.
That's what I thought, too. But I'm like, well, the kids love them, so we just won't mention the fact that that's what bratwurst are made out of.
Oh, my goodness. Well, every time I buy Johnsonville brats at the grocery store, I will
think of us. Yes, because, like, it's pretty much guaranteed that everybody in Sheboygan probably knows, like, 10 people who work at Johnsonville. It's Johnsonville and Kohler, because Kohler, like, plumbing and toilets and things like that, everywhere you go, Kohler toilets. Kohler is here also.
And every time I go to the bathroom.
Yes! You'll think of me every time you see a toilet. It'll be great. Oh, Angie.
Oh, my goodness.
That's what we're known for here in Sheboygan.
That's quite a reputation, quite a reputation. Although Pittsburgh is unfortunately, a lot of people still think it's very dirty from the coal mining and the steel plants. So we have that reputation still, I think.
Oh, yeah. Sarah, I don't know if you heard Abby's interview, our sister-in-law, on Entrepreneur on Fire, but John Lee Dumas even joked. He said, oh, so you brought your husband home from the steel mill. Like, he was joking with her the whole time. I was like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that's totally still our reputation. Yeah, that like, a very dirty
thing. I've never encountered anybody that works at a steel mill ever from all our years of being in Pittsburgh, you know?
So Sarah, you're the one who's still in Pittsburgh?
Yes, I'm still in
Pittsburgh. So I'm just picturing you sitting there and your face is like all blackened with smoke and...
It is. I've got that hard hat on with the light shining so I can see in my house with all the smoke and everything.
Well, I have to tell you, too, this is really funny. Before, like, you do the end of the interview, I had to laugh because when I was looking for the book ideas and was at the library and I was on your website, and I went to the About page, and the only line that stood out on my phone was Beth Ann saying, Schwamberger. Nobody ever wants to get married to a guy named Schwamberger. And I was laughing in the middle of the library because I'm married to, my last name is Gordon, which is like a first name. And my maiden name was Tim, which was also a first name. And my sister married a Gunther, which is also a first name.
Oh,
so her and I laugh all the time. We're like, we just wanted to marry men with real last names. So you can be proud and wear your Schwamberger with pride because at least you don't have a first name for a last name.
That's true. It is a real last name.
It is real.
That would be crazy if someone named their child Schwamberger.
No, never say never.
That's right, Bethany. Your next child, you can name him Schwamberger.
You can call him Schwam. Or Burger.
That's right. Oh, I like that idea. Yeah.
Angie, it's been so fun talking with you, and I've loved learning about the process of organizing a craft show and the classes that you teach. I'm so jealous. I wish I could come learn from you and, like Sarah said, come to that craft show. But as we wrap up, can you share either a funny or adorable mom moment that's happened recently?
I know, and it's so funny because I knew this question is coming, and I'm like, what do I even think of? I'm just trying to think of it. Do you want to hear, like, the grossest of gross kid story? Would that, like, does that qualify?
I don't know.
I don't, maybe.
Okay, I'm just going to go for it. I'm just going to share this. And obviously, this is when my children were much younger, okay? So, like, on their, because they would be mortified if they knew that I was telling the story where people could hear it. But they were quite a bit younger, and they had a friend over. And they were playing so good. And I was like, oh, this is great. I'm just going to do my thing. I was probably working in my sewing room. And I'm thinking, this is so wonderful that they're playing so good and they're so quiet. So after they had been quiet for so long, I just decided to go up the two flights of stairs and just, I thought I was going up there to admire this like beautiful group of three little girls playing upstairs nicely. And I was unprepared to find them upstairs playing in the sink with poop, like actual poop. And it was the grossest thing I've ever seen. And they were shocked. Like, I think when I caught them and I said, what are you girls doing? I think that's when they all of a sudden looked at each other and thought, what are we doing? And so they were playing doctor and they were doing tests. And so I had to laugh about that. That was just one of those moments that was just so awful that I had to just pause, pick my job off the floor, and then just realize, okay, this is one of those moments that someday, like at my kid's wedding, I can tell this story.
Well, there's a lot of useful information doctors can find.
That is so true.
I was just going to say, as a nurse, I've done my fair share of poop tests on children. Oh,
see, so they had to have seen it somewhere. I don't know, maybe on TV. I don't know what prompted them to do that or whose idea it was, but it was just one of those crazy moments. I'm like, I didn't sign up for this. I thought I was going to have children and they were just going to play nice, but no. I had that moment.
I'm glad it was in the sink. That's
it was
good.
And they were being very clean about it, too. They weren't touching it with their hands, but I couldn't even, like, try to comprehend how it got there in the first place.
Oh, those kids.
Yes, you just never know. You never know. So the moral of the story is if it seems too good to be true that your kids are playing really good and quiet for too long, you need to go check.
You need to check. I agree with that moral of the story,
yes.
Definitely.
Yep.
So, Angie, can you tell all of our listeners one more time where they can find you online?
I would love to, yes. Well, you can find me on Facebook. I do have a Gathered in Sewn page. And the big thing for people to remember is that Sewn is not S-E-W-N, it's S-O-W-N. So that's always a miss, like people tend to put an S-E-W-N. So anyways, Gathered and Sewn on Facebook, Instagram, it's Gathered and Sewn _handbags. I tend to do a lot more on Instagram. I'm really getting into that right now. I've been kind of figuring it out as I go. And then also my website, which is just www.gathered-sewn.com. And then I have my email and all that stuff on there too.
Great. Thank you so much, Angie.
Well, thank you for having me. This was so much fun. I appreciate it.
Wow, that was lots of fun talking with Angie today. I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you're looking for the show notes, you can find them at brilliantbusinessmoms.com/104. I wanted to mention that I completely agree with Angie that the early days of opening a new shop on Etsy are the toughest. And once the ball gets rolling, it gets a lot easier to bring in those sales. However, to get the ball rolling, you have to get found on Etsy. When people search for a product, they need to be able to find your product in order to get those first purchases. If you're unsure of how to make sure you get found in Etsy search, I would encourage you to check out our Get Found Guide to Etsy. You can find it at brilliantbusinessmoms.com/guide, or there's a link at the top of our homepage for it. But the Get Found Guide to Etsy walks you through the steps that you need to take to be found in Etsy search. And it's step by step, it walks you through everything that you need to know. It's not a lot of theory, it's a lot of practical advice on steps you can take so that your shop and your items will be found in Etsy search. And getting found is what can really get the ball rolling on Etsy for your shop and for your sales. So once again, that's brilliantbusinessmoms.com/guide. I hope you're having a great day. I hope that this episode maybe got your wheels turning in some different directions for ways that you could take your business or grow your business or other avenues that you might want to try. It's so fun to think about all of the possibilities when you really stop and think outside of the box. So now it's your turn to head out there and be brilliant.